Thank you very much. Rag Radio comes your way every Friday afternoon from 2 to 3 p.m. On Co-op, which is an all-volunteer, cooperatively run, solar-powered community radio station in Austin, Texas. We're also rebroadcast on several other community radio stations around the country. Our shows are put up as podcasts, and they have legs. Can a podcast have legs? We get a lot of people listen to us from all over the place. So we're going to have a great show today. For one thing, Tracy Schultz isn't here. He's out playing at South by Southwest. The great Alan Campbell is here. Alan was my original mentor at this radio station. I was his apprentice when I first started in 2009. So Alan, you're engineering.
That I am. And Tracy's engineer for me too, so we're kind of like on the buddy system.
So, okay, the buddy system. I want to mention that Alan is all in green, as am I, although he didn't even recognize it as being green at first. Roger Baker's here taking pictures. Roger got a new car. All kinds of excitement. Eliza Gilkison, the wonderful Eliza Gilkison, is our guest.
Cool, the new car.
Well, you know, we can't. So, okay, twice Grammy-nominated singer, songwriter, and political activist, Eliza Gilkison is here with us. We'll have live performance during the show. Eliza, a singer, songwriter, political activist, one of the nation's most respected folk roots and Americana musicians. We're going to talk about a lot of stuff, and I think it should be a lot of fun. We're going to talk about this incredible new video that Eliza and Cisco, her son, did, and I'm going to give you the link. Well, I'll tell you the link. It's Eliza. The best way to get to this video is ElizaGilkison.com, and then go to videos.
Right.
That's easier than
right
a complicated, you know, URL. So
that's true.
And it's GILKYSON.
I was just going to say, probably ought to spell my name.
Yeah, ElizaGilkyson.com. So if you go there, when she sings this song in a little while, and I think we've decided that's what we're going to do, right? That
something.
You're going to sing it,
yeah.
And you can look at the video, because the video is incredible, and we're going to talk about it and talk about how it was put together in just a minute. We're also going to talk about, Eliza wrote an article called How to Write a Protest Song, and it's a very interesting way to set us off in a discussion about music and politics, the role of the artist in society, a whole bunch of stuff that and Eliza's been very involved in political activism over the years, and of course very involved in creating wonderful music. The song is the great correction that the video was put to, and it features a collection of powerful photos, quote, depicting the brave souls who throughout this nation's history fought for a decent society and a protected and loved planet. The daughter of legendary songwriter Terry Gilkison, Eliza entered the music world as a teenager recording demos for her father. Since then, she has released 20 recordings of her own, and her songs have been covered by Joan Baez, Bob Geldof, Tom Rush, Roseanne Cash, and they've been used in films, PBS specials, and on primetime television. She's toured worldwide, is a member of the Austin Music Hall of Fame, and in addition to her two Grammy nominations, which were for Best Folk Album and Best Contemporary Folk Album.
In the days when they actually used to have two folk categories, but believe me, we're lucky now we have just one.
I was going to say, when they paid a little bit of attention to quote, folk music. She's a multiple winner at the Austin Music Awards and the Folk Alliance Awards. So, and that's just a little snippet that I took out of her bio. I mean, there's so much more to say. So, welcome to Rag Radio once
Thanks,
more.
Thorne.
It's always fun to have you.
Yeah, I'm glad you guys are here.
Yeah,
as usual.
I'm glad we are too, because everybody has to be somewhere.
Well, these days, with the arts and funding getting cut back.
Whew. Yeah, that's another whole story.
Isn't
that a story? Yeah. Okay, I wanted to start with the article about how to write a protest song.
Sure.
Because I think it's fascinating, and you wrote, you said, oh God, the light in here. For me, the most effective political songs lead us through storytelling, historical context, allegory, and symbolism, down a path where we can see and feel with our own eyes, hearts, and imaginations how actions and outcomes are connected in our lives and in the systems that are in place in our world. Tell us a little bit about your theory about how to write a protest song, what a protest song should be, and I think that you that you know it, I think you think it has to be melodic, it has to, but it can't be jingoistic.
Yeah, well, you don't want to be so message oriented that, and that's kind of a turn off. So, I mean, I can barely listen to message music myself. So, you know, I think first and foremost, I'm you know, a big proponent of just writing a great song, you know.
Right.
And I, they called it How to Write a Protest Song. I don't think I ever would have called it a protest song. I think I would just, you know, I don't know what I would call these songs. I think they're maybe just, you know, about you know, how to be a, you know, decent, caring human being on the on the face of the earth today. So,
have you noticed we can't control what headlines they put on what we write?
No, right? That's really true.
And I have to say, I'm one of the ones that puts headlines on things too.
Yeah,
so.
I know we have to get everything down to like, you know, one little phrase.
And, yeah.
But so, the songs of a resistance movement, I mean, it covers a lot of ground. And I was just thinking about this the other day because some of the best resistance songs weren't. They weren't like, you know, clever or anything. They were very, very basic. And what you're looking for in some songs is really just a refrain that everybody can sing together. That's great folk resistance music. You know, you think a song like We Shall Overcome, it's basically the same line over and over again, and
right.
It's just awesome. You know,
right.
It totally works.
Right.
It's very moving.
Right.
So when you're thinking about people singing together, you don't want to make it too complicated. You know, but if you're going to be writing a song about the system of capitalism or the overarching, you know, threat of unsustainability, then you know that's a whole other. How are you going to make that speak like art? You know, make it visual, and because you know art really speaks beyond words, and then you're using your words so to create images so that you can trigger the imagination of the listener.
Yeah, the one good thing about music is that the message can be delivered directly. You know, I grew up in a family of artists and writers. My mother was an artist, and she did stuff that was political. But with art, with plastic arts, you're once removed. And with writing, you're once removed. You know, you aren't communicating directly. Mm-hmm. You're communicating with some kind of a substance, which then the viewer sees. Mm-hmm. So I don't know why I got off on that. But
well, I mean, music is probably one of the most accessible mediums, and it is a language, you know, and it is a felt language. So that it goes beyond explanation and words, and that is interesting when you're a wordsmith, because sometimes words really can get in the way. So you know, it's really a feel. You have to feel your way when you're trying to fit words into music.
Yeah, and it has certainly parallels to poetry. You know, where you're actually dealing with the words in terms of how they sound as well as what their meaning is.
Isn't that so true? And even as a singer, it's a lot about just the tone in your voice. You know, what is that connected to in your body? You know, it's something felt again.
Okay. It seems like it's times of great crisis often, times of great political turmoil, when some of the great political songs, or whatever we call them, protest songs, are written. You know, I mean, certainly the civil rights movement and the Vietnam War movement, there was a lot of turmoil, the Depression, you know, Woody Guthrie and all the other people who, the great, you know, we are sort of in some political turmoil right now.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to see what art comes out of it.
I think it's going to be incredible. It's going to be very moving. When I was making the video, because we sorted through thousands of photographs to come up with ones that worked in different time periods for this song, and some of the best ones were of people singing, you know, especially certainly the civil rights movement, where it was just incredible pictures of people just in a state of, you know, life-threatening danger, singing, and it makes me want to just cry right now when I look at those pictures. Martin Luther King and the Abernathy family standing in the front lines, you know, really facing down death and singing. It's like singing into your fear. And so I think it takes a lot of courage to do that, and it's something bigger than the art form itself.
Yeah, and singing into your fear, that's such a beautiful way to put it, you know, because so many of the there were great songs written in prisons, and certainly great songs written that came out of slavery.
Singing into your grief.
Singing into your grief.
Yeah, your sorrow.
Your sorrow.
For sure.
So how do you go about sitting and writing a song? I mean, does the idea come to you? Do you work with the words?
Yeah, I kind of, you know, it's one of those things where you can't stare at it directly or you scare it away, so you kind of acknowledge that it's sitting in the seat next to you and you don't look at it, you know, you just kind of go, you know, I know you're over there and let's work together on this. So it takes me a while, but generally I play around with music first just to kind of trick myself into a musical place, and that often will open a door to where lyrics start coming. But you know, in something like The Great Correction, I had the idea that I wanted to write. I liked the idea of there being a correction that as a parallel to this whole economic. It's an economic term. They talk about the market correcting and stuff.
Right,
and so I thought, let's talk about the earth correcting. Let's talk about the reaction to these systems that have been in place that are so unfair and so unbalanced and so unsustainable. What happens when that, what I call the great correction, a bigger correction than any market, you know, has ever seen. So you can only take a system so far before it has to correct. I mean, there's probably some natural law around that.
Yeah, I'm sure there is. So, do you want to sing for us now?
Sure.
I don't think we should go very long without your singing. So.
Well, should I do The Great Correction first?
Yeah, why don't we go ahead and do it, and then we'll talk about it. But if we're going to do that, I want to tell people again, go to elizagilkison.com, that's GILKYSON.com, and up at the top there's a menu, click on videos, and it's the top video there.
It might even show up on the homepage, actually.
Maybe it's on the homepage,
I think
too.
You can click right on the homepage.
Okay, but in any event, you can find it easily, because I found it, and I'm kind of a tech doofus, so. And go ahead and play it without the sound, so that you can see the images, because they're incredible, and we'll talk about them in a minute and how
All right.
that was put together. So, Eliza Gilkison.
Correction comes.
ages, lovers of the mystery. They've been saying, people, let your love light shine. Poets and sages all throughout history, they say the light burns brightest in the darkest times. Down to the wire, running out of time, still got hope in this heart of mine, but the future waits on the horizon line for our daughters and our sons. I don't know where this train's bound, whole lot of people trying to turn it around. Gonna shout to the walls, come tumbling down, and the great correction comes. Don't let me down, the great correction.
Isaac Gilkison. Oh, that's so wonderful.
Thank you.
I really love that song. I think it's a terrific song. We're going to need to take a break in just a minute, and then we'll come back and talk about the video. But tell us first, we've got a minute, how did you come about writing this song? What?
I actually wrote it during the Bush years, and because I think it was on a record of mine called Beautiful World. It was really kind of a culmination of a new political understanding, a better understanding, more informed understanding of how the systems in place in the world today were holding us back, and that there was, we were going to have to pay the price for it, and that we were not dealing with it in time. So that's where the idea of writing about this great correction came from.
Okay, it's a great song.
Thank you.
Okay, I think we're going to take a break, and we're probably going to hear some more Eliza Gilkison during this during our segue here. So, Alan Campbell. This is Rag Radio, and my guest is Eliza Gilkison. That was something a little bit different.
The
change of pace.
Calm
what were we just
before
listening
the
to?
Storm. That was Calm Before the Storm as a duet with Sean Colvin. To me, that song is like one of the most appropriate ones that I do right now, because it's all about people gathering together before the
Great Correction.
Exactly. And there's the camaraderie of these like-minded souls being together, and that somehow that was our saving grace.
Yeah, it's fun, and we'll get. I want to talk about the video in a second, but it's You know, right now, there's a time, it's a time, obviously, with the political transition that we're seeing in this country, and originally, after Trump was elected, and nobody, most people didn't think that was really going to happen, and there was sort of a collective nervous breakdown that happened with a lot of people.
Yeah, I certainly went through that.
And, I know people, a friend of mine's daughter called and just cried for an hour from Harvard.
Yeah.
So, and it just, I mean, and there was an uptick in suicides. I mean,
I know. Well, if you're not grieving, you're really not paying attention.
But on the other hand, this whole resistance is happening, and there's action and activity all over the country, and in Austin, an incredible amount around a number of issues, especially immigration. So there's that togetherness that happens, and that's one of the things that we're an expression. But music becomes very important for bringing people together and having a chance to express.
Yeah, in some ways, I feel for me musically, this is. I think as I say in that song, that last one, "Calm Before the Storm," your vessel's made for times like these. You know, I feel like my vessel is sort of made for times like these.
Right. Tell us about why did you decide to do this video around the Great Correction, and how did you put it together? Because you've got some incredible photography, and it tells a story.
Had I known it was going to be so difficult, I might, Cisco and I may not have taken it on.
Yeah. And Cisco is your son.
Yeah.
Cisco Ryder.
Cisco produces my records, but he also produced my last video on my dad's song, his grandfather's song, Fast Freight, and which we shot all around Austin and did a lot of train stuff, and it was really fun. And he did such a great job doing that, and he has such a wonderful eye for the shot and such a beautiful way of seeing things. I thought I was going to give it to him first to see if he would be interested, because I knew I could trust him with this idea. But I had the idea right after the election, because I was, like everybody, I was just reeling, and I just thought, what can I do? What can I do? And also, how can I equalize myself? And I felt like if I need to plunge myself into something that feels proactive. And so I started to think about this idea of putting together a historical journey through the history of resistance movements in the United States. And at first, my first vision was to do just resistance in the world. It became very clear.
That would have been an undertaking.
That would have been about a 3-hour song. So it shows how naive I am. We just pick certain themes. But Cisco very quickly said,
let's narrow it down.
Yeah, if we can just get it into this country, we're still going to need a 10-minute song. And it was really hard, because we looked through thousands of photographs, and it was really hard to pick. Some of them were so moving, so powerful. And I even put out a call on Facebook for, if you have any pictures from certain time periods. And there were a lot of pictures we had to leave out, because it's really, literally, I think, a 4-minute song. So, that it was a tall order.
You could have
sung
it twice.
Yeah, that would have been where or double the outro or something. But yeah, so it had to have a real arc to it. It had to be telling a story. It had to be pretty literal with the lyrics, these shots, because by the time we got it down to a couple hundred shots, then we would just put them up against the lyrics, and either they enhanced the lyrics, or they worked together, or they didn't. So that was the deciding thing. And then, we ended up the search for the photos was really intense, and then we had to license them legally, of course, 73 photos, so we had to license for it. So, but it took me into the world of photojournalism in a way that I had never gone before, and it spoke volumes to me. There really is a point with a great photograph where it speaks more than words ever could. And this was something, I've always, of course, been a fan of photography, but this was eye-opening for me to see what the difference is between a great photograph that's timeless and really a statement, a real work of art, and a snapshot, because there are millions of snapshots out there, but great art in photography is a whole other language. And so that led me to the doorstep of some of the great civil rights photographers, and that was where my mind was blown, because I started to see these certain names kept emerging, and that, you know, Leonard Fried, Bob Adamson, Matt Heron, certain names that started to emerge as these guys that were always there. They were right on the front lines, and these series of shots, they were there when the water cannons, when the fire hoses were going, and when people were being mowed down, they were there at photographing the march across the bridge in Selma, Montgomery, and into Montgomery. They were there photographing the jeering, and they were there photographing these kids going to school, protected by the National Guard and being jeered at on all sides by kids their own age. And you know, it's just profound, the kids that were taken and arrested, little kids put into jails, and you know, just, and the horror of that and the courage that it took. So I really wanted to have these photographs in there, and I fortunately was able to get a hold of the ones that I wanted, and to use them for the video. And then, of course, of new photographers who are also putting
themselves
right out
there. Yeah, I'm just
looking
at the list of photographers here, and it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, there are a lot of them. And people have been doing this for many, many years. They're really the real deal. They're very courageous people, and they don't make a lot of money doing this. You know, they do it because they believe in it. The photos from Standing Rock, she was there, Adrian. She was there for Adrian White. She was there for 3 months, and her photos, we ended up using almost all.
Yeah,
her.
She had a whole series of them.
They were just amazing shots.
To start out with, what were you looking for in terms of images? Were you looking for individual images that told the whole story? Were you looking with stuff that would kind of flow in a certain direction? I mean,
we didn't realize how literal we were going to have to be, and certain shots were really hard to find a photo to go with. And interestingly enough, the one positive line in the entire song, which is "and the end could be the start of something new when the great correction comes," is
right.
Really the only. The rest is like pretty dark,
pretty grim.
Yeah, and that was the last photo that we found, because some things are overstated and they look like Hallmark cards. They don't work. You know,
right.
they're commercial and they did not work. There had to be this level of street involved there that almost a sense of, you know, invasion of there's something you're witnessing there that
right.
is almost too intimate. But the last shot I was talking about, the end could be the start of something new. We kept looking at, okay, we need to show, you know, solar rays on a solar, you know, panels on a building somewhere. We need to show community gardens, or, you know, there's all these things that, how can we convey?
Or a cooperatively run radio station.
Yes,
or something.
Exactly. Everybody, all the people at the well, that's right. Yeah. And so we tried all these things, but we finally ended up with this image that we found just really at the end, and it was an image of two black kids playing in a water fountain, and the light is shining on the water fountain in a park, and it's turned into a rainbow just because it's a water fountain.
Right.
And the joy on their faces, it's simple. And what I loved about it was that we're not talking about some fabulous high-tech future. We're talking about
talking about the rapture.
Yes, we're talking about two kids in a park with their father sitting on a bench watching them while they're just glorying in the and safe, and that the rainbow is in the fountain color. It's not God's rainbow. It's Earth's beautiful little rainbow, little light refracted. And that to me showed what a great photographer can do, because that photo spoke of the future in a way that you know, windmills and solar panels never would.
Another thing that this brings to mind is this sort of all in the family mm-hmm. angle. Eliza Gilkison is my guest. you know, that your father was one of the great songwriters of our country. You know, great in musical, you know, Broadway musicals and in other, you know, just some of the iconic songs that he wrote.
Yeah.
And it's still, you know,
it's
that
still
we hear
out in the world.
The
yeah, well, Jungle Book, Bare Necessities.
Bare Necessities, for instance.
That was
yeah.
really kind of, I think, in a lot of ways, the song that described his philosophy.
Name a couple more that were just iconic.
Well, Greenfields.
Greenfields.
Memories Are Made of This, which Dean Martin made a hit, and All Day, All Night, Marianne, which is a hit for Harry Belafonte.
Harry Belafonte, yeah.
And his band, so, he had a band called the Easy Riders. They were a big folk, you know, in the 50s, right. They were a folk right. band, yeah.
And you started working with him.
I did, at a very early age, I kind of got this voice, and so he just used me to...
Were you a
demos.
Child star?
I think I can safely say I've never been a star, child or otherwise. But he put me in the studio because he would make records. He would make demos of his songs for other artists, and so he just—I was his hired voice.
So, was that intimidating to come out of that? You know, out of that shadow.
I mean, the most intimidating. Well. It was
not a shadow, but
it was a shadow, right. And plus I was coming into the 60s and really moving away from his kind of music. So his thing was really on the wane when my interest and shift occurred. So he didn't really help me that much, except for that. I mean, he couldn't help me in the music business because it was shifting so quickly. But I think more than anything, he helped me just in song construction.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's he was a really visceral, heartfelt songwriter who felt his way into his song and had a great sense of authenticity with his songs that it's a gift you either have or don't. So and he had it in spades.
Right. Before we go on any further, once more, would you sing something for us?
Okay, let's see. Well, since we were talking about the election and how we were all falling apart, and this I wrote. Do you remember when right after the election we had this supermoon? It was like, what planet am I on right now?
Yes.
And you look out, you go outside, and you see this massive moon, and everything was still, and you were thinking, all these people in this country have voted this into being, and who are we? Where are our people? And so there was this sense I had. I went outside and I was looking at that moon, and I had this sense of all of us who were grieving, but we were gathering ourselves. We were gathering ourselves for this resistance. You could feel it. People were just pouring outside into the streets, and the media, everything, we were trying to reach out to find each other, and so this song came out of that.
Eliza Jokers.
The center cannot hold in somebody else's dream. Nothing is as it seems. All of the like minds reel from this blow to the heart. Turn to each other on the night of the supermoon. There was nowhere to run. Now it's time to do or die. Time for grieving. Time for saying goodbye. Time for leaving the land.
gazing into the future on the night of the supermoon.
Just love it. Eliza Gilkison.
First time that little baby's been trotted out.
Really?
Well, I played it at Strange.
You heard it here for the first time.
It's the first Strange time I put Brood. It on the radio.
Another premiere for us. Yeah. Very, very lovely song.
Thank you.
Very lovely song. Okay, I think since we're at a break point anyway, we might as well take a break. Mm-hmm. We'll be right back with Eliza Gilkison. I'm Thorne Dreyer. This is Rag Radio. What were we listening to, Eliza?
That was Midnight Oil, yeah.
Oh, that was Midnight Oil.
That was Cisco and me singing together,
right,
my son.
Yeah. And how, it's interesting. By the way, I just wanted to say, I was just telling Eliza how bad I am with technology, considering I'm somebody who works with it all the time. Not really works with it. We always get all these messages and stuff, and it's always fun. Chase Robertson, I think he posted this on Facebook, said, I saw her open for Arlo Guthrie.
Well, that was a long time ago. Yeah.
So that's cool.
Yeah,
that's cool.
That was a really long time ago.
Eliza Gilkison is our guest, and Eliza is an Austin treasure, is a national treasure. twice nominated for a Grammy and a member of the Austin Music Hall of Fame. The accolades are you know, legion, and it's an honor to have you on the show.
Thank you, son.
All in the Family is continuing for you.
Well, that's I mean, you know, that last song that I just played you, my granddaughter Bea Rosa helped me write that one. She helped me write the music on that one. I played it for her a few months ago, and because I had, but she said, she had my nickname, Mina. She said, you know, you need it right there. She kept catching me going, you need to change that, hold this longer. And I just went with her idea, and she was completely right. So she's a really good guitar player, and she writes she's starting to write songs, and she's really good. So I
we didn't quite catch the nickname.
Mina. They call me Mina. I think it was a grandma thing that I have five grandkids.
But we had to have it here because I mean we had a song premiere, and there's probably a lot of people who didn't know that.
That's right. Only select few know grandmother name.
But it's out there in the airwaves now. So. Yeah. But is that a special thing to continue that tradition?
And it means a lot to me. I mean, neither of my kids really had the sort of neurotic urge to become, full-time musicians. I don't think either of them. But they are both fabulous singers. And Cisco, like I say, is such a great producer and makes these great videos. And he's so talented. So I don't know. It's something I love working with my kids. They're so smart. We speak the same language. I trust them. I trust their vision. We've had to work through parental dynamics early on. We had to, but I think we're mostly past all that now. They've earned my respect. Yeah, exactly.
I just knocked on wood.
Because early on, you are supposed to be the one who tells them what to do.
And then they're the ones that tell you.
That's right. And that was a baton that has been passed. Yeah. You know, they're smarter than I am, and they have a vision, and they're more tuned into what's going on now. So I listen a lot to what my kids and what my grandkids, I'm interested in the music they're listening to, and their thoughts about things.
What do you think about the music that kids listen to now?
Oh God, my grandkids have the best taste in music. They're listening to stuff, and they're listening all over the map. My grandson Riley, he's turning me on to music all the time. They turn me on to Beck and Bon Iver, or whatever his name is. How do you say it?
I don't know.
They've turned me on to music that I, just love. It's the best.
Well, it's an interesting time because now there's so many musical forms that are out there emerging and intertwining, and because of the technology, because of the availability, because of the internet, you have access to so much stuff.
Old school Americana folk music is really, that's pretty archaic, really. So it's very interesting to me. I just went to the Folk Alliance convention up in Kansas City and spoke on a panel there with Billy Bragg on activism and music and songwriting. Half the audience was young kids that are really doing innovative stuff. Yeah. And so there's a whole big movement of new songwriters and mm-hmm. singers coming up, and a lot of people of color writing folk music, really writing great stuff.
And people not of color doing hip-hop. interesting. Yeah.
Well, I'm just glad to see more people of color going into folk music. Because
that's great. That's an amazing thing.
Because it has a great history of socio-political validity, and so I like seeing the torch being passed to these new singer-songwriters that are really thinking that way.
Right. Billy Bragg, incidentally, has sure done a lot of good work.
Well, it was the first time I'd actually met him, but we got to do this panel together with him and Rami Hassan, who is this Egyptian folk singer who rose to huge fame in Egypt when they had their coup.
Right.
So that was who I did the panel with, I mean, Rami is going back to Egypt, and he may very well be in great danger. And so that's real courage on the line there. But Billy, man, that guy he's been political for a long time, and he really knows his politics. He is very informed, and he gets a lot of flack for it too, because everybody's so divided right now.
Yeah, well, yeah. Do you find that in the arts community, in the music community as well?
I just think that...
Or he just gets flack from the outside.
I think it's in the political community right now.
Right.
There's a lot of hatred going on just between, within factions, much less outside. I mean, forget about the right wing. How are we going to have unity on the left with the Democrat Party? I mean, it's going to take a huge amount of unity to turn this thing around, and I'm not seeing it. So that's frustrating. hopefully will some kinds of leaders will emerge that will galvanize all aspects, all of these polarized, individuated subgroups.
Well, you know, divisiveness and begets divisiveness, I guess.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, when it's at the top the way it is, and
it's true,
and what we've just been through.
And there are compromises that must be made in order to have unity, and I think people are just so, you know, polarized right now that I don't know that dialogue is possible. But, you know, hopefully we will be galvanized into action at the proper times.
Yeah, well, we have to be.
Yeah.
We have no choice.
Well,
it's
things
not...
will come down to state level, you know, decisions, right. And right now that's right. A good thing.
Yeah.
So if we can act on the state level, we have some opportunities.
All right, Eliza Gilkison, we're down to 10 minutes. I want another song.
All right. Well, here's another new one then, because that's fun to trot these out. This one is going on the next record, which is a bunch of, I call them my secular hymns. It's just a bunch of songs that... searching for something that that is outside of a belief system, and this is called In the Name of the Lord. Now you're talking to the night, you read the words by candlelight, you cling to them with all your might. Dread the crashing of the rain, the waters rising on the plain, the lightning flash, the hurricane are out of your control, and it's all in the name of the Lord, and it's all. Set to sail. We watch the empire's epic fail on tiny handheld screens. Rapture of the buy and sell, the faithful at the wishing well. They rage against the infidel, lurking in their dreams. And it's all in the name of the Lord. Pull the oil up through the sands, desecrate the holy lands. The blood will touch our hands in boardrooms far away. The lies we tell to fill the hole, like coins dropped in a beggar's bowl. They can't redeem us when we go into the dimming day. And it's all
Eliza Gilkison, In the Name of the Lord. Boy, the way, I mean, and well, that's another whole, that opens up another whole can of whatever. So. Before it's too late and we've just got about 6 or 7 minutes left, I want to know what you're doing now. I want to know about the workshops and the retreat that you've got working, all of that kind of stuff, because you share this glory.
So. Well, I've found that I really enjoy teaching songwriting. I wasn't sure that I would because I'm not a technical, you know, I don't think of those things in technically, but I love helping people find that inner writer and that inner voice. And so I have a house up in Taos, New Mexico, and I've been running these songwriter retreats in the summer. I do one in June with John Gorka and Cisco, and it's really fun because we have several songwriter instructors on board, and everybody gets to record a song, and we do a lot of one-on-one, a lot of group circle stuff, and just really people do a lot of writing in these workshops, a lot of exercises, and a lot of performing, and it's really fun. It's very group oriented. And then the second one, which I just added, is with Mary Gaucher and Gretchen Peters, two incredible songwriters, two very powerful women. Gretchen's a really hit songwriter, and Mary is just an activist and a visceral writer, and has really actually just completed a book with Yale Press on songwriting and finding that voice, that authentic voice. And so we're going to do another one in Taos in July with the three women. That's going to be really special. So you can go to my website, elizagilkson.com. There's find the link there to the workshops. And I'm doing another one right here in Texas in the Hill Country. With Darden Smith, who's been doing these songwriting with soldiers workshops. But this is just a songwriting crafting event that we're doing in Dripping Springs in April. Do you have the dates for that? I don't know. It's somewhere.
How about this? April 21st, 22nd, and 23rd.
Yeah, and that's right there in Dripping Springs, a three-day thing that's going to be really fun. So.
Okay, and they can find out details on the website.
Everything's at the website, yeah.
Okay. So how do you bring out the inner songwriter? What is the technique? How do you do it? Is it different for every person?
It is different for everybody, but there are some tricks, I think, that we all use. One thing is you have to really turn off the external stimulus. Now, that's a very hard thing to do because my theory is that really one of the natural states of being a sentient human being is to be sort of in a state of longing and incompletedness and I think we placate ourselves constantly by inputting information, eating food. You know, there are a million things we do to distract ourselves, going online, watching television, listening to music, even that. I think the way to really access that inner creative part of yourself is to shut those things down and to live with a sense of discomfort for a while, be uncomfortable with it and stay with it until there's a certain point when creativity starts to bubble up. And that's just one of the ways.
I've known especially songwriters who've just no matter how much they try, they can't do anything. And then all of a sudden they wake up in the middle of the night.
Waking up in the middle of the night, that's one of the things I say. Never say, I'll catch that tomorrow. If someone comes in the middle of the night, I mean, I really believe in that. You have to get up. It's a way of honoring the muses. When they call, you got to pay attention. If you shut them off, then they
might not come back.
Well, as Arlo said that time when I opened for him, he said, they all go to Bob Dylan if you don't catch them.
Yeah, and he's had as many as he doesn't need more. His share. What else are you working on?
Well, I'm making this new record, the Secular Hymns record, and we've got 12 songs recorded, but we haven't produced them up yet. I've got them down now, and so we've got this sort of the skeleton, and so we'll be putting a lot of Austin musicians to work here pretty soon.
Well, that's good. That's important.
So, yeah. Well, we got the best players here, so we don't have to go very far to get them.
Do you all go crazy during South by Southwest?
If I have a record out, I'll probably work it, but I don't right now, so I'm happily not getting it going down into the fray this time.
Some of us, we try to stay as far away from downtown Austin for a while.
I know.
Because it's such a major
thing.
If you just go
down and park and start walking around, it can be really fun.
Okay. Thank you so much, Eliza Gilkison. This has been wonderful.
Thanks, both of you guys.
And we're going to do it again with Cisco, too.
Yes, let's do it next time.
Time with Cisco. All right, okay, I'm Thorne Dreyer. This is Rag Radio. Our guest was Eliza Gilkison. Thank you, Alan Campbell.
Pleasure as always.
Next time.